Greetings, I am Shusada Kona Kumada. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shusada Kona Kumada. Thank you for joining me tonight for Satsang. It's a pleasure to have you with us again. I'm joined tonight by Piela Yen, Megan. Is Linda still here? Linda, in the other room. Pujanda and Tim. And we're all pleased to be here to give you this level of service. So let's go ahead and we'll get started. Take a deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. And now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. All right, wonderful. Come on back to me. So, how many of you out there in BBS land are struggling with the energies right now? I wish I could see all of you raising your hands, all of you out there laughing. They are harsh. You know, we've got a whole lot going on right now, kind of astrologically, and the energies just are rough. So remember that however it's presenting for you in your personal life is merely an indicator of what the collective is experiencing. So there's a point at which in dissolution work, it stops being personal. And what you begin to see is how it's the collective. Everything is the collective because there's only one. Remember, there's only one mind. So just as the one Godhead, whatever you want to call it, creator, expresses through the multitudes, it's the same thing in this fallen construct with the one lower mind that's expressing itself through every individuation of human consciousness. So whatever you're experiencing on a personal level is the experience of the collective. and you are falsely identifying it as yours, when in essence there's only one story playing out. It's just very subtle, and it hides very well, because your experiences will look so different from another person's experiences. And so it makes it very easy to, I'm watching Pujanda have her dinner. She's going to get me hungry and distract me. No, thank you. So the collective is hungry right now, apparently. Okay. So the one story plays out through all of it, and you just don't see it because you're so wrapped up in your own little personal life and your own stories that you don't see what's playing out. And it's kind of like you're this microscopic lens, you know. And as you do more and more work, you move into more of a wide angle lens where you can see a bigger picture. And for someone like myself, who has the privilege of working with people, you really see it, because the people that you're working with are all bringing you the same story. You know, they have no idea, of course, but you do, because you're sitting there with them talking, or they're sending you emails or texts or whatever. And you're like, oh, look at that. There's the same theme again. There it is. You know, it'll look different, but it's the same story. So right now there's a lot moving. And we were just talking in our Charlotte session that there's an awful lot of self-judgment flying around right now. Negative self-judgment, self-incrimination. And if you've been dealing with that, just know that that is part of what is coming up. And it's really important to not be judgmental toward yourself. Now, this is kind of, these are, it's a slippery slope here, because I have to watch how I talk about this. From the level of the personal self, let's say just someone who is, you know, just your average human on the planet, to take that little piece of teaching, that could be very dangerous, because the understandings aren't in place for them to know what to do with that, first of all. And the capacity for them to really see it for what it is extremely limited. So I have to kind of explain everything that I say, because I don't really know who I'm reaching tonight. Self-judgment has its place in this work, which seems a little strange, but it does, because the ego holds itself in such a place of self-righteousness most of the time that it normally doesn't allow itself to really get into a lot of self-judgment. It always wants to blame outside, you know. And of course, the blaming outside is the self-judgment, but from the level of ego, it can't see that. It sees that as the other, you know, the ego lives in separation. So if I blame you out there, it keeps me from having to put the blame here. And it is the same thing, but you can't see it. So for a time, while you're, when you're new to dissolution work and, you know, up to a certain point, turning that finger pointing back toward yourself is important, because you've got to start to see where your actions have been manipulative, where your actions have been controlling, where you've tried to, you know, get one over on others, or you've tried to cheat others out of things, or you've been extremely selfish in your motivation. It's important to see it, because until you really see it, there's nothing you're going to do that's going to change that. Now, the prevailing story is always, you know, oh, I'm not selfish. Of course, most people on the planet would agree with that. I'm not selfish. Look what I do. You know, I give money to the ASPCA a couple times a year, and what else do I do? I gave money to a homeless person once, and I save bugs instead of killing them, if at all possible. Right? And all these things add up to proof of how unselfish I am. And it is true in those instances. Maybe there wasn't a lot of selfishness going on, but you've got to look at the other, 364 and a half days out of the year and look at what is going on. And this is, I laugh, but because I can't not laugh because it's hysterical to me. Of course, when you're in it, it can be very difficult to start to look at that because we don't want to see that about ourselves. You know, it hurts when you start to recognize that you do treat others, and especially those you love, from a space that is all about you. You know, when I say human love is predicated on behavior, that's exactly what that points to. It's selfish. So it says, you are going to be the way I want you to be, or I won't love you. And the reality is that's exactly how we treat people. Now we can verbally say, no, I don't do that. We'll take children, for example, because they're the easy ones to target here. I have a teenage son, and let's say he, functions completely differently than I do. So he comes home with an F on his report card, and I'm immediately all over him, shaming him for doing so poorly and this, that, and the other thing. Can I say I love him? Well, of course. Are your actions showing that you love him? No, not so much. Is it easy to justify the actions? Well, yeah, because the concept of right and wrong exists here. Good grades are right, bad grades are wrong. You have a kid who's extremely intelligent. So therefore, if he isn't getting good grades, it means he's being lazy. Lazy is bad. Hardworking is good. You see, and all this stuff, it all just builds up. But at the end of the day, mom screaming at her son for a bad grade is not an act of love. Other than when it is, and sometimes it actually is. But we're not going that deep right now. Not right now. When spirit moves through as mom screaming at son, it is an act of love. Because sometimes that's exactly what son needs. But for the sake of all of the egos listening out there, we're going to reserve that for another discussion. So where do you do that? Where is your selfishness apparent to you? Now, maybe there are parts where it is apparent to you. Maybe you say, you know what, when it comes to Saturday morning, I am selfish and I sleep in because I work hard all week and I really don't want to get up and make my kids breakfast and I don't want to have to deal with whatever. So I sleep till about 10 in the morning. And you can own that. Good for you. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. So where does it hide from you? Where does it hide from you? Because that's what you got to start looking for. Where are you selfish? And it hides from you because you justify it. All right. Let's look for an example. A lot of times it hides from you too. So let's take a woman who has a shoe fetish and who has a family, and they're doing okay, but they don't have a lot of extra money. And she gets a hankering for some new shoes and goes out and buys herself two or three pairs of shoes, spends a few hundred bucks. And then let's say that her kids ask her later that day or something if they can go out for ice cream. And she's like, no, I'm sorry. We don't have the money for ice cream. It's really tight right now. And the kids are like, Mom, how kids are. And then she yells at them. Don't you understand? I told you we don't have the money, right? Of course, why is she yelling at them? Well, she's yelling at them because she feels guilty about buying the shoes in the first place. Why did she buy the shoes? Well, because of this overriding selfish desire to get something for herself at the cost of potentially having money available for her family. Does it make it wrong that she did it? Does it make it wrong that she did it? No, it doesn't make it wrong that she did it. But it's how she holds it, you see, that makes it unclear. We'll put it that way. If she wants new shoes and she really, truly believes that it's time for her to get some new shoes and she feels good about picking them up and bringing them home and doesn't feel like she has to go hide them in her closet or wait 2 weeks before she brings a pair out so she can say that she's had them for a while. I wonder how many women out there have done that. Are those new? No, I've had them for a couple months. It's great. Oh, that's not sneaky, no. Okay, so if she's clear about why she's doing it, and then she's open with it, and she says to the kids, sorry, kids, I just spent all our available money on some new shoes, and then she's okay with the fact that they're not going to like it, then fine. That's fine. But it's the stuff that you do for yourself that you feel guilty about, or that you know inside yourself wasn't okay. You know, those are the things you need to be looking for. And they do hide well, you know, because no one wants to sit in that space. But as someone who would listen to my program, you have to. I mean, that's the whole point, right? How on earth are you going to unravel a personality if you're not willing to look into the dark corners? You aren't. Because that's where all of the stuff that's holding you here exists. It's in the dark corners. And you have to shine some light into the dark corners. And it's the light of awareness to move into a space where you're aware that it's occurring. And then you get in underneath it to figure out why the need is there. You see, because you don't go out and do anything without a need underneath it. The need creates the desire. And the desire will create a belief. And now you're taking action, right? And now you're passing judgment when the belief gets challenged. So she comes home, she's got her new shoes, and she hides them in the closet. And her husband is in the closet, and he sees boxes he doesn't recognize, and so he says, what's that in the closet, you know? And she's already defensive. as soon as he mentions boxes in the closet, she's already got her gander up, so she's already defensive. What do you mean? Well, I didn't recognize those boxes. Did you get new shoes again? Right? And now she's all, yeah, what about it? What if I did? What's it to you? What do you care? Right? And you see it? So if that's there, you see the resistance there? If that resistance is there, something's not clear. And it's not clear with her. If it was clear with her, he could even say when he sees the boxes, oh, dear God, did you get more shoes? Don't tell me you went out and bought more shoes. You know, you really have a problem. It needs to be addressed. But if she was clear with it, she'd be like, yeah, I got more shoes. They're really nice, too. I really like them. And be perfectly okay with it. But that's not what happens, is it? That's not what happens. And so the two will play off of each other, you know. Her guilty conscience kind of feeds his resentment. And then his resentment comes out toward her as anger and frustration, and that feeds her sense that, you know, he doesn't understand her and he doesn't love her. And you see this whole little cycle thing just playing itself out. It doesn't have a happy ending. Okay. So we always come back to the resistance. That's one of the biggest pieces to look at, is the resistance. So when you're in your world and you experience resistance, you know there's a personal story playing itself out here that you are quite attached to. And you are not enjoying the fact that something about it is being challenged, because it's making you feel defensive, because the resistance shows that you feel defensive. for you, in order for you to feel defensive, it means you feel victimized first, right? So the victim has to defend itself. And this is a very pervasive thing, resistance. You have to look all the time. I would ask you, if you go on, since you're all listening to BBS, you can either go to our website at kamara.center, www. You could go there and go under media and blogs, or on our BBS page, which is BBS radio / what is it? Satsang with Shisada. If you go there, I think, I don't know, but if you go to the blog section on BBS, I put blogs up there too. And in both spots, I put one up this week. It's called, what is it called? What did I call it? What did I call it? Help. I can't hear you.
I just saw it too.
Defiance. Oh, it's Defiance. That's it. Okay. So you'll see a blog called Defiance. And I want you to find that and read it. Because I'm not going to read it to you here on the air. You can go scout it out if you're interested. But it's called Defiance. And defiance is something I've been seeing a lot in people recently. So I wrote a blog about it. But defiance is right in there with resistance. That's why I bring it up now. And I'm directing you to it. Defiance is one of the things that the ego loves to play with. Sometimes it does it very subtly, you know, in passive-aggressive people. There's an awful lot of defiance that pops up, but it's kind of under the radar, you know. You feel the energy of it more than it being something that's really in your face. And some people are just full-blown defiant, like physically, right? You know, a man who gets triggered by something, and all of a sudden his posture gets taller and he sticks his chest out and he leans into the person that he's angry with. That's a defiant posture. Defiance is something that everyone really needs to look at, because the ego loves to be defiant. Why? Well, very simply, because the ego itself, remember, in the moment of perceived separation that never happened, but the ego, you can't tell the ego that because it was the experience of the ego. In that moment, when it felt like it got kicked out of, we'll say, home, for lack of a better term, and then couldn't get back in with its union with God, it became very defiant after a while. It wasn't like the first pass where defiance came in. It took some attempts of the ego to get back to its source, and then the experience of failing multiple times for it to move into the space of full-blown defiance. And of course, at that point, it's, you know, it's the old middle finger hand gesture to God. That's about it. You know, who needs you anyway? I don't need you. I'll handle it myself. That's defiance. And you'll recognize it in your own world. I promise you, there are places where you're going to see it. And I see it in my students with me. My students get defiant. Why are you hiding, Linda? I saw that. No, you've never done that. It's beautiful. Pujanda's going, I haven't done that yet. Won't be long. Okay. You do it with everybody. So of course you're going to do it with your guide, because she's the one who's going to push you harder than anybody else will. So of course it's going to rear its ugly head. Now, it may not come across verbally to others. It may just be something that sits inside, right? The inner sense of screw you. The inner sense of I don't need this. The inner sense of whatever. One of my favorites. Yeah, whatever. Find yourself saying that often? Get whatever. I don't care. Uh-huh. So in there, there's pain. You can feel it if you really look at it. Whenever someone does that and they say, whatever, there's pain that sits there. And that statement comes out of pain. And it's coming out from that self-righteous, defiant place. Because it doesn't want to recognize the pain. And that's the key, is getting to that spot where you have a moment where the natural reaction would be to go, whatever, just whatever, go ahead. And to stop and to not do it. And instead to speak from your heart. To recognize, wow, like that hurt me. Whatever it was that just happened hurt me. And because I'm hurting, it's making me want to lash out, or it's making me want to act dismissive, push people away, pull myself away. It can play out any number of ways. But recognizing that that's what's going on, and then speaking from that place. Now, the communication between you and the other person may not end up looking the way you wish it would look, but at least it's honest, you see? So when you don't come back from the space of, yeah, whatever, and instead you say, you know, right or wrong or indifferent, that hurt me. And I can recognize that I'm hurting right now because of what's happening between us. Now, the other person on the other side may not be capable of handling that. But that part's not your problem. The whole point is that you handle yourself like that. And if nothing else, at least it opens up the possibility that the other person could handle it that way in return. Without it, there is no possibility. Because as soon as your defensiveness, your defiance comes out, it's only going to be met with the same on the other side. One trigger triggers the next trigger. Yeah. I mean, realistically, you know, how many of you are like married to psychiatrists or something where you go, yeah, whatever. And they're like, honey, are you hurting? Honey, what's the matter? Probably not many of you, I'm guessing. Oh. But it's got to start with you, you see. And that's all that matters anyway. It's all that matters anyway. You are never responsible for how another person takes anything. And there's nothing you're going to do or say or think that's ever going to change how another person is going to take anything, you see. It's not your job. It's not your job. What? Come here. I have to call Linda over. She just had this look on her face. It looked like utter defeat. I want to know what this is all about. Come on, darling. You have to talk in here because I can't hear you.
I don't know. I don't know why. That's so hard to do. Because in so many situations, the work that I've been doing, I see that I'm responding differently, yet what I get back is still the same garbage. And it's just so hard to swallow. It just keeps going on and on. And so you keep pulling back and pulling back and pulling back and watching and looking and hoping that there's going to be a different response.
Oh, what was that? Look at that.
A swing.
Look at that, though. Hoping.
Yeah.
So what does that show?
Expectation.
And?
Desire.
And? Yes, and?
Attachment.
There you go. That's it.
That's perfect. Oh, gosh, I'm glad you just did this on the air. That was so perfect. Because in her saying, I don't know what it is, and she just starts talking, it presents itself. And there it was. Hoping. Keep hoping for a different outcome. That means that she's attached to the outcome. The attachment to the outcome is the one thing that's going to guarantee you don't get the outcome. She walked away from me. Okay, we're done here. It's so subtle. It's so subtle. So even in her working very diligently to remain the observer, you know, to stay in the space where she doesn't lash back out, she tries to be impersonal, right? It's all that stuff is there. But what's sitting there is there's desire for something different. She's not loving what is in the moment, is she? Definitely not. There's still resistance. The resistance is there. It comes through as desire for something different than she's getting. And even though she's saying, but I'm trying, I'm doing, you know, I really am. I'm trying. Well, the thing she hasn't done is she hasn't dropped her attachment to it. Yeah. Go ahead.
So that actually makes a lot of sense, because what I was saying before in the physical session that we had earlier in Charlotte, that how it keeps coming to me, an attachment to an attachment is still an attachment. And I'm realizing, because I'm so used to being able to process it out and feel better afterwards. Mm-hmm. And now when I look at it, I'm like, that's the same story. It's nothing different. Like, I know what's there, but it's still there. And I'm still left with that feeling of feeling like poo because I'm in that space. And then, you know, you have that expectation that I should be able to do something about this.
Mm. Yeah, because the one thing that y'all want is you want to swing. You all want to feel better. What if there was no feeling better?
Well, and that's what's getting me, is because I can't process it out. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, I think that's what's really bothering me, is that I can't just, I'm going to process it out and it'll go away.
That's right, because you aren't the doer that's going to get rid of it anyway. You see? Remember, you don't have to change anything. You don't have to change anything. You have to see through it. How do you see through it? Just exactly what we're saying right now. Be objective. Be in it with no resistance. With no resistance. You remember, you got everybody on the planet working double time to make themselves feel good. And what I'm telling you is that's a huge chunk of why you never feel good. Because you're working so hard for something, it's not necessary. Who says you need to feel good? Who says feeling good is preferable to feeling bad? Who says feeling bad is feeling bad if you aren't attached to it? What is feeling bad other than a concept? Why are you smirking at me? Come on. I can't hear you. You have to say it on Radio Land.
It's just funny to me because I like rainbows and sunshine. So to say what's wrong with feeling bad? It's like, ugh. I'm much better with it now than I used to be. Mm. But there's still work to be done.
Yeah, it's because you still think that there's a you that feels bad. You see? And you aren't that. You aren't the one who feels good, and you aren't the one who feels bad. You're the witness to both. And it's only the ego that attaches itself to having a preference for one over the other and it identifies with all of it. And it holds the whole thing in place. But y'all, if you're going to... Ooh, my Southern just came out. So, y'all, if everyone listening truly wants to walk off the life-death cycle, if you want to be done with third-dimensional reality, there's only one way out. And that is through the dissolution of all concept, all of it. You want to say something? You don't want to get up. What? No, tell me. Go ahead. I'll speak it into the thing if I need to. Megan's like laying down with a blanket. We're painting quite a picture for the people tonight about what our office looks like. Okay.
I was going to say, even the concept or the attachment of walking out of here, because that's one of my biggest things that I'm working on currently, is the, which didn't make sense until right now, is that I have an attachment to walk out of here. Like I want it so bad that I feel like I'm never going to walk out of here.
That's a beautiful point. And this is one of the moments where paradox is really important, that you have at least a mental understanding of how paradoxical this work is. It's exactly what you just pointed to. In order to walk off the life-death cycle, in order to quote-unquote get out of it, you have to have a burning desire to get out of it. High levels of attachment, right? But that's meant to carry you to a certain space, okay? And at that certain space, that falls away. You see, because last week or the week before, I was giving everybody that Sai Baba quote, life is lost in dreaming, being is lost in becoming. And that's, Megan, that's exactly what you're pointing to. You want it so bad to walk out of it, but it's the desire for freedom that keeps you from being free. And it is. It absolutely is. But it's not as simple as saying, okay, so I'm just going to stop, you know. Okay, so as of today, I'm free. It's all done, you know. No, because it's fully experiential. So you'll know it when it's done, right? Until then, it's not. And you need that desire in place that is there. So again, it's not that attachment's bad. It serves its purpose, right? And right now, the purpose it's serving for all of you is it's showing you where you're stuck. Remember, you don't have to change it. You don't have to become unattached. That means you're changing it. You just have to see through it. See the attachment for what it is. When it's seen for what it is, it dissolves away and then there's no more attachment. But it's not because you chose to become unattached. It's not because you did something to unattach yourself. You see? It just naturally will dissolve out. Okay, go ahead.
So just to repeat. So you see the attachment for what it is. So you don't just say consciously, I'm not going to be attached to this anymore. I'm not going to be attached. I'm not going to be attached. So you just, I guess I'm kind of not clear on seeing the attachment for what it is, like that it's a concept, that it's just a desire that has the bottom, that's an unmet need, or like it's kind of overanalyzing maybe, but how do you see the attachment for what it is?
Okay, so this again is going to be a paradoxical answer, because in order to do what needs to be done with it, now remember the personal self believes itself to be the doer, okay? And that's okay, because it kind of utilizes that concept to do the work, right? Okay. So in what you're seeing, what needs to be done is in the moment where you see the attachment, remember it's all about how you walk it out. So you see the attachment, you see what would be the patterned response to the attachment, and now you're going to do the opposite. Yeah, okay, good, I got recognition there. So in doing the opposite, what you're doing is breaking the pattern And literally in the brain, you're doing that. You're breaking the long-term connections because it's very used to firing in a certain order and having your response. It's the action-reaction thing. So you do the opposite. And that starts a precedent for something different. But you're not replacing one attachment for another, you see. And when you become, adept at seeing the attachment for what it is, and then kind of in the space of you are the doer, you believe yourself to be the doer, in that space saying, no, I'm not doing it that way. Kind of, at a good level of defiance, right? Because even that concept will serve when it needs to. So say, no, we're not going to do that. We're gonna function from my understandings, or I'm gonna function from what I was taught, right? I'm gonna walk that, even though it doesn't feel natural, it's not gonna feel good, but I'm gonna walk it. And in doing so, that sets up the precedent now where every time you practice it, it becomes that much easier to do it. And at a certain point, the whole thing just falls away altogether. That's what, remember, and I've said to you like a million times, just seeing something isn't enough to dissolve it. This is exactly what I'm talking about. It's the seeing it that has to happen first, and then it's how you walk it out in the world. That's the kicker. That's the piece that when you do that enough, that's what will dissolve it. Because now you're functioning from a different place. Yeah. And after a time, it will have broken that connection. When that connection, and if you look at it from the space of the brain, when in the neural net, when that connection is severed, meaning those synapses, when they fire, they don't, one little piece isn't connecting to that little piece anymore because they broke their long-term connection. When that's done, that equals the dissolution of the attachment. You see that? It does make sense. That's exactly what happens. Without the attachment, those neurons aren't going to fire in that specific order anymore. If they aren't firing in that specific order anymore, there's no reaction to take place where the patterning would do a certain thing based on the attachment. It doesn't exist anymore. So again, it's very paradoxical because for a time it looks like you are stepping up to change something, right? You're taking an understanding. It's not yours yet. Now you're going to walk it. You're going to keep pushing yourself to not do the same old thing, to recognize the patterning when it wants to kick in, to stop yourself. And that's all when I say we utilize the mind to dissolve the mind. That's exactly what I'm pointing to. You are going to utilize it, right? Come in from the level of the observer so it sees clearly, and then from the level of the personal self, take a different action. In doing so, that's the thing that enables it to dissolve out. So it's not that you're going to polarize from one attachment to a different attachment. It's the releasing of just the attachment, period. And you do that by stopping the process of attaching. Yeah.
Shoot, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, so in not attaching, perhaps if you had an attachment to an outcome, you would try to force something to happen so that you can get to that attachment, right, to what you're attached to.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. Now I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, at the level of non-attachment, it wouldn't matter. The outcome doesn't matter. The outcome doesn't matter. Because you see it for what it is, right? There's an understanding that takes place at that level. You understand that even if there was something where you had a part in trying to make some kind of a change or make something happen in the world, there was work that you did or whatever, and then the desired outcome that maybe the group held or what have you didn't pan out, right, it would still be okay because you would recognize that for whatever reason, it just wasn't the right time. Maybe it wasn't meant to, period. Maybe, you know, just certain pieces aren't in place yet for it to happen. And so you hold it very loosely. You know, it doesn't mean you drop it all together. Maybe it's good work that still could come together and more could happen. And maybe just the timing wasn't right. So you see that for what it is. So rather than, you know, go back to what we were saying about, you know, self-incrimination and judgment and all, you don't use that as an opportunity to be like, oh, you know, well, I really messed that up because it didn't work out. And all. No, not at all. When you're clear with yourself and you know that you've given everything you could have to, say, a project, you've done your best, you really did, you gave it everything you had, and you're good with that. I couldn't have done anything different, and I couldn't have done anything more, and I'm happy with what I did, then at that point, whatever is supposed to come of it will come of it. It's just not up to you to decide what that something is, you know, and that's where non-attachment is so important. Because if you're too attached to it, that right there can mess up the whole thing. It puts the blocker on again, so spirit can't move the way it would move if it was unimpeded. Remember, it's the ego that stops spirit from moving through you as you. It's the ego that does that. And the ego is nothing more than, because the ego has no power in and of itself. It's nothing more than consciousness identifying with it. You see? So literally consciousness, you think of it like it goes into like a dream state. Or it's believing something to be going on that isn't real. You know, but in that happening, spirit can't move through you as you because it is impeded. Yeah. Is it time? I don't know what you're saying to me. I can't hear you.
We actually have a caller.
Oh, well, let me take the call.
We're going to do that instead of playing the end song.
We'll take the call real quick. And then if he has to cut the end song, he can. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Sure. Hey, you're on with Shasara. What can I do for you?
Hi. Hello. Shasara from Connecticut. Can you hear me?
I can. Hello, Pete.
Hi. I just want to tell you before you go to the end of it that you are absolutely painting a great picture for the people tonight.
Well, thank you, I think.
Because we're out here in BBS land and... we're trying to dissolve, but you really helped us, at least you helped me a lot tonight, because you really explained really well, I think, how it is that the ego just can't make that final leap.
Yes.
Without dissolving.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for calling in and giving us that that feedback. I so appreciate that, Pete.
Okay, so thanks a lot, and I'll be in touch.
Wonderful. Love you. Okay, so I guess, okay, I'm getting, my treasurer is harping on me. Okay, so we had to, I think you know if you've been listening, we had to literally change the name of our nonprofit organization. We were threatened with a lawsuit. So we have changed our name officially to the Kamara Center for Spiritual Awareness, and we have to get that trademark so we don't end up in the same problem again. So if any of you would like to show your appreciation through a tax-deductible donation to the Kamara Center, we would always so appreciate that so that we can get the money together to do all the legal stuff we need to do. And you can do that through, I think, the BBS page. We have a donation button up now. We do, hopefully. If we don't, we will soon. Or you can go to kamara.center, and there's a donate button at the very bottom of our webpage, and you can do that there. Again, it is tax deductible, so thank you in advance, any of you who do want to help us out with that. Okay, so we're going to go into our meditation tonight. It's a little longer because the energies really are crazy, and I'd like to be able to facilitate for you to help you transmute out what doesn't need to be sitting here. So please enjoy it. Stay with it tonight, and we will be back with you next Thursday for Satsang. Thank you. Good night.
Ishwaram pa sutasriman.
We
You are divine.